It was kind of interesting doing the worship without any band and feeling quite vulnerable with the way that we approach God. And it leads in quite nicely to how completely vulnerable I feel this morning, laying my heart bare with you and not having much at all to hide behind. When I listened a couple of weeks ago to Jean doing her talk, I thought she did it brilliantly. There's a lot of things in Jean that I wish I was like, and one of the things that she did really well was choose part of her story and hone in on that part. And I thought, what a brilliant way of doing it. That's so sensible. That's perfect. And then I looked at my story and I thought, no, I can't be like that at all. So I'm going to throw the whole story at you today. But I've broken it down into chapters. And, you know, there's a couple of hundred, but bear with me. One of the first things I thought I would do, I think as we spend more time reading the Bible, we begin to realise that there are people in the Bible that we relate to. And I wanted to read you a passage about a lady in the Bible who I relate to for lots of reasons which will become obvious as we go forward. So this passage is in Luke 7 and it's verse 36. When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at a table. A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. So she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. Now, she was really criticized for doing this, and Jesus was really criticized for the situation as well. I'm not going to go into that. I'm just going to keep reading. Then from verse 44. Then Jesus turned towards the woman and said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I came into your house and you didn't give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You didn't give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You didn't pour oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little, loves little." And then Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." So, with every good story, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And this story is really about, it's about lots of things, really. It's about drugs and witches, and it's about surrender, and it's about God, and it's about the huge redemptive power of God. So bear with me as I go through this. That's quite big up there, isn't it? It's only a post-it note. So we start with the dreamer. This is chapter one. I've always been a bit of a dreamer. And it started really early on. I ended up living one of my first dreams, working as a model and working in TV. It was all I ever wanted to do. And I loved it, and it was brilliant, and I could earn money at it, so it was great. One day, it all came crashing down. I'd been out with some friends, and we were sat. I think we were going clubbing. We were up in London somewhere, and we were just getting ready to go out, and they started passing around a joint. Now, I had spent quite a lot of my teenage years drinking and smoking weed. I'd given up most of it, because I'd found it really hard to turn up for a modelling job at 5 a.m. in a random location, looking half decent if I'd been completely wasted the night before. So I'd given up most of it. But this night, for some reason, something clicked in me and I took the drugs. I smoked this thing, and it put me immediately into a really scary place. I felt immediately that I was filled with paranoia, with anxiety, with torment, and I couldn't turn the clock back. It was only a couple of seconds, but I couldn't get back to that decision not to take those drugs. I've heard many people talk about bad trips, and most people laugh about it and say, oh, you know, yeah, I had a bad trip. I couldn't laugh about this. There was nothing funny about it at all. It was horrendous, and it was really, really frightening. So the friends I was with, being not very good friends, they all went out clubbing, and they left me in this place on my own to battle with what was going on. Let's project forward a little while. I was stuck in this place in my head, and it was a really frightening place. I can't really remember a lot about it. I just remember the torment, the paranoia, and the fear was really overwhelming, and I was trying to function as a normal person, but I couldn't really do it. So one day my mum said to me, she said, what is going on with you? And I had to admit to my mum, actually, mum, I took some drugs and I'm stuck in a scary place in my head and I don't know what to do. But I said to her, I need to speak to somebody at church. Really random. My mum and dad had come to Gold Hill a few times, but kind of, they weren't really full-on members. So mum didn't really know what to do with this, but she said, I'll give church a ring. And she phoned up and she got me an appointment with a chap called Jim. Jim has obviously become quite a hero of mine ever since. I sat with Jim and I poured my heart out to him. I was slightly, probably more terrified that day than I am today, which is saying something. But to go and sit with somebody in church when you've never really been in a church and say, I took some drugs and I'm in a mess, was quite a scary thing to do. And he said to me, have you ever had any dealings with the occult? That's my cliffhanger at the end of that chapter. So we then move on. I had to sit with Jim and say, yes, actually. I had a lot of dealings with the occult. I'd spent a lot of my teenage years exploring. And I'm not really somebody that does things by halves. And so if I'm going to explore something, I'm going to explore and plumb the depths of that thing. So I had got quite involved with some occult stuff and actually found it really fascinating, as a lot of people do. And it had kind of taken me on a bit of a journey to the point where I had things living with me in my bedroom and I could hear them breathing every night. I would wake up in the morning and things had moved around my bedroom. And I woke up one morning and there was writing on my bedroom wall and I didn't know where it had come from. These things obviously were really, really scary. But I didn't really know what to do about any of that. I then ended up in a relationship with somebody when I was probably, 15, 16. He was my first boyfriend, and he was a witch. Now, a lot of people don't believe that that's a thing. People might talk about white witches, which apparently are really, really good. Believe me, there's no such thing as a white witch. A witch is a witch. And they just colour it with whatever they want to colour it with. He introduced me to more dark stuff, and the things in my bedroom kept breathing. And it was all quite scary, but I was still sort of quite fascinated by all this. I had to tell Jim about this and open up my heart to him. Jim put me in touch with a couple from church who spent hours and weeks and probably years, I can't remember, praying with me week after week to introduce me gently and carefully to the love of Jesus. I was in quite a mess. They were very kind people. They had the patience of saints. And they took me on this journey. One of the things that we realized through this journey, God started giving me dreams. And in these dreams, he showed me that when I had broken up with this boyfriend, he had cursed me. So he had put curses on me getting married, and he had put curses on me having children. There were other curses as well that we had to go through and break, but those were like the main two. So the dreams that I had were quite horrific. They were quite graphic, and there was absolutely no doubt at all of what God was showing me in them. And so the torment in my head at this time was enormous, because obviously trying to step into that kind of spiritual warfare is quite a scary thing. And understanding the mightiness of God and the depths of the darkness is quite a thing. There was an awful lot of prayer that went into this, and God gradually unpicked the mess that had become, you know, what it was. I think it's important to say at this point, those two curses, being cursed for getting married and being cursed for having children. This year, I have been married for 25 years. Woohoo! And I chose a very patient man. I also have 4 children. Hallelujah! I have 2 gorgeous boys, and I have 2 gorgeous girls that God gave me identical twins on Valentine's Day. So the depths of the despair and the scariness and the enormity of the blessing is huge. I want to put this out to you because I think none of us, you know, you can have chats with people and they might talk to you about they read their horoscope this morning or they've been to see a Reiki healer or whatever those things are that people are doing. Witchcraft is witchcraft. And I think it is time to call it out for what it is. There's stuff that all of us have been involved with. There are things we've watched on telly. There's music that we've listened to. There are things that we have in our homes that are taking up residence that are things that are not of God. When we give those things places in our hearts and in our lives, it stops the intimacy of God. But it also can bring strongholds into our lives and into our families' lives. And we need to be really careful. We need to be on our guard, and we need to repent of those things, bring them to God, and ask for his immense cleansing. So I'm just putting that out there to you today because I really believe that there is a socially acceptable witchcraft in our society. And if we are not recognizing it, we're just going along with it. So what I mean by that are things like Halloween. Oh my goodness, Halloween is everywhere at that time of year. Let's be people that stand against that. I met somebody once who was a Reiki healer, and she said, "I love that you have a faith. We're the same, aren't we?" I was like, "No, we are so not the same. This is not the same stuff." There are other things that we're, you know, it might be reading your horoscopes or watching particular stuff on telly. It might be Harry Potter. Now, this is a really controversial one, but where does that sit on your bookshelf? Because let's call it what it is. It's basically, in my understanding, helping children to celebrate the darkness, to introduce them to magic, to wizardry. It's witchcraft. It's just written in a nice way, in a socially acceptable way. And we need to give that to God and see where he stands with that, because if we read in our Bibles, it's pretty clear where he stands with it. So I'm just laying that out there for you as a challenge. Because I feel, because of my journey and the things that I've been through, I run a mile from all that stuff. And I think it's really important to call it out and call it what it is and bring it to Jesus. Oh, there's a verse. I was going to give you a verse. This is actually, when we were in the prayer room, one of the verses that that John mentioned. And it underlines what I was just talking about. We do not wrestle against flesh and gut and blood, but against principalities and powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. It's there in the Bible. Let's not mess with this stuff. And if we have, let's just bring it to Jesus, because from my experience, he'll sort it. Next chapter. Okay. Walking with Jesus, there have been quite a few things that he's asked me to surrender. Some of that stuff, the dark stuff, was actually, although it was hard to surrender spiritually, it was easy to surrender because I didn't want it anymore and it was really scary. But there's been other stuff that he's asked me to lay down, which has been quite harder to lay down. Once I started hanging out with Jesus a bit more, and he was asking me to take him a little bit more seriously, he started giving me more dreams and saying to me, all that stuff that I had from my modeling days, all the sort of memorabilia that I had kind of kept because it was really precious to me. There was like signed photos from really cool people and party invitations to like the coolest parties in London and loads of really special things that I'd kept. And God started giving me dreams about, come on, Helen, it's time to destroy those things. We need to get rid of those things. And I went to see somebody in church and I said, I've had these dreams and I feel like God's asking me to get rid of this stuff, but it feels really hard and I don't want to do it. And she was like, you probably need to then. So he'd showed me very, very carefully in the dreams that I had to destroy my portfolio, destroy like any of this memorabilia. And I had to lay it down at Jesus' feet. And these are all the kind of areas where I find myself, like that lady at the beginning, kneeling at Jesus' feet, washing his feet with her tears, laying down the most precious thing. This was my dream. This was all I had lived for. And Jesus was saying, come on, it's time to move on. And he actually said to me very clearly one day, Helen, I have got more for you than this. I was like, when you've got a big dream, there isn't really more than this. But apparently there was, and I had to lay it down. And I said to him, okay, I'm going to step aside and you show me. You show me what your more than this is, because I'm interested to see. I'm still kind of waiting. No, I'm joking. It's there has been a depth of fulfillment over the years, which I don't think I would have found otherwise. Okay, this leads us on to the intimacy. At this point, I'm actually going to invite Mark up because I need him to help me with something. Because the way that God had, the way that God has spoken to me about this, there's constantly things that we need to surrender. There's constantly things that I'm holding too tightly that I need to give to him and lay down to him. And I was talking to him about something recently and I was saying, Lord, I miss you. I don't feel as close to you as I sometimes do, and I want to hear your voice clearer. I want that intimacy with you again. So he showed me this little analogy, which I'm going to share with you, okay? I don't know how to do it. Can you hold that with that hand? Okay. And then hold that wrist. Okay. So what he showed me was that God's hand is always holding our arm like this, and he never lets go of that. And at times, the intimacy comes when we hold his hand like this, and at times it's like this. But there are times when there are other things in this hand. This is my Monopoly money. Houses. Shoes. It's not really a big thing for me, but it's representative of things that we might hold dear that get in the way of God. Dogs.
I'm not saying anything about that one.
There's a boat in my Monopoly set. I always thought it was a car, but it's a boat, so we've obviously gone up in the world in Chalfont. And what I've added in is the rope from the Cluedo set. So these other things are quite obvious with what they are. The rope from the Cluedo set I've put in because there are things that we have in our lives that are strangling the life out of us. And that's the dark stuff that I was talking about. So I'm going to put that there as well. So I can't have that intimacy with Jesus when my hand is full with this other stuff. So what Jesus said to me was, let go of that other stuff and just hold my hand, and then we can have the intimacy and we get our intimacy back. Thank you very much. He's a good assistant, hey? I just wanted him to come up and hold my hand, really. There are things that we all need to lay down. And I'm guessing that some of the stuff, it's going to be different stuff for all of us, but it's whatever we're holding dear stops that intimacy if that thing we're holding dear is not Jesus at the center. Okay. Sometimes I do have a bit of a laugh with God. And I think it's been quite important, because if not, I would have spent literally 25 years crying, which I probably have anyway. Sometimes, apparently, I go off on a bit of a tangent and the Lord needs to pull me back in. And so I thought there were a couple of stories that I wanted to tell you in this part, but I'm actually only just going to tell you one of them. And it's just something where God really made me laugh. So being a mum with four children, six of us in our family, I had driven a big white van for a long time. And I loved my van. It was brilliant. It worked for us as a family. But I was very excited when the kids started driving and I could get rid of my van and I could drive my Mini. So I had spent a long... This is confession time now, okay? I had spent a long time sitting in the bath Googling private registration plates for my car. Now, I know you thought there were depths to me. There are really not. My bath time is my Google time and my social media time. And I had spent a lot of evenings Googling private reg plates for my car. And I'd done this with God. I was talking to him about it. It wasn't like I was not. I'd got to the point where I could sell my van, drove it in, part exchanged it, drove out in my Mini. It was a very happy day. And then a couple of weeks later, I'd chosen my private reg plate. It wasn't expensive. I'd gone for a real cheap one because I'm quite a cheapskate. On the way back from the garage, when I was driving my Mini home, I said to God, this is your car. Be glorified in the way I drive. That's a big ask. That is a big ask. Help me to drive it safely. Don't let it become one of the things I hold on to get in the way between you and me. This is your car. I then went quite swiftly to get my private reg plate put on my car. And I was quite excited. This had, a lot of research had gone into this. And I got it fixed. I got it fitted on the car. And I drove home and I literally felt physically sick. I had to drive a long way home because I was like, why am I feeling sick about this? What is going on here? And so I said to God, I was like, seriously, Lord, are you talking to me now? Because I'm not listening. I was just really excited. And I said to him, why do I feel sick about this? What's going on? And he said, you told me it was my car, but you've put your name on it. And I had to surrender. And I had to take the private plate off my car. And I had to deregister it. And I had, more than anything, I had to go home and face Mark and say, I changed my mind. At which point, Mark rolled his eyes so far back in his head, I thought he was having a moment. But but actually, it was just me sitting back down at the feet of Jesus and saying, okay, I surrender my private plate to you, Lord. So the surrender is ongoing. You know, there's big things that we need to give to God. There's the scary stuff, the torment in our heads. There's all of that. But there's the little everyday things when God says, don't have that in your hand. Just keep the intimacy with me. Just keep holding my hand. Okay. The challenge. So my challenge to you, this whole series is called Your Story, God's Glory. What is your story? Is it a story of entrapment and fear? Or is it a story of celebration and redemption and intimacy with God? Is it a story full of mistakes and shame and grief? Or is it a story of just openness to the living God, where we're just walking with him every day? So that is my challenge to you. That is the last chapter. What I would like to do, when I was praying about this, I felt God gave me a poem. And although it doesn't specifically relate to the things I've talked about, when I asked him about it, I felt that he wanted me to share it with you. It's about how much we protect our hearts and how much we make, through the battles that we've been through and the things we've gone through, we bind our hearts up and we protect them, and then it's really hard for God to get in. So I would really like to take a moment to read this to you before we enter back into a time of worship. And just be quiet with God and let this maybe be your prayer. It's called The Barbed Wire Heart. I've wrapped my heart in barbed wire and now I'm in a tangle. I want to sit and chat with you as you see it from every angle. I was trying to protect myself and bound my aching heart, but I got carried away and I can't undo it and I don't know where to start. Jesus, can we talk about the hurt, the tears, the pain, the broken dreams, the disappointments, the striving all in vain? Can we talk about the losses, the shame, the grief that runs so deep, the sting of broken promises and the ones you promised to keep? Can we talk about the heart that is constricted by protection, stifled and starved by a debilitating fear of rejection? Jesus, come. Undo me. Unpick the barbed wire heart. Untangle this masterpiece and reveal your work of art. So I leave those thoughts with you as we come back into a time of worship. Thank you.